This is the podcast, the Bob McCown podcast for a Wednesday, the 16th day of September. Yours truly, along with John Shannon. And
not featuring, huh?
Well, some days yes, some days no.
I know, I noticed that. Yeah, I get lots of people asking me, how come you're not featured more often?
Get your own podcast, and then you can be featured entirely. Goodbye.
Why would I do that, Bob? Why would I do that? I just love being here taking your abuse.
Well, no, but you open this door every damn day.
Well, because I get huge amounts of mail, huge amounts of mail. Why aren't you featured?
Talk to the producer, and he can make the changes. You know, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I don't have a cartoon caricature at the beginning like you do.
Well, sorry. That's all I can tell you. Yeah. I'd hate to think what that would look like.
Oh, man.
Here's our friend, our pal, our buddy, our chum, Bob Elliott. Hello, Elliott.
Hello, Robert. How are you doing?
I've missed that voice. I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in. And you? You're doing all right?
I'm good.
Oh, no. I love the chapeau.
As a tribute to Uncle Rory Calhoun, I just thought I'd put this on, you know.
Thank you very much. Well,
I haven't worn this in a couple of decades.
I thought you were going to the Kentucky Derby, Bob. It's okay.
Well, it's not a Derby hat.
If Uncle Rory is watching somewhere, I'm sure he's appreciative. But I'm guessing he's looking up, not down. That's another story altogether. Yeah. You've spent some time watching this baseball team. I am. I got to tell you, I'm confused. There are days where I love their competitiveness. I love their energy, their ability to not give up. And this has been a trademark of good Blue Jay teams historically. There's a lot of things to really like about them. And then all of a sudden, you know, 20-6 happens, 18-1 happens. And you start looking around at this team and you go, whoa, wait a sec. Maybe this is a mirage. What have you been able to figure out over these 40 or so games?
Well, the thing I don't understand is how they have 16 pitchers on active pitchers on their roster, on their active roster. And the little shortstop is pitching last night for the second time in 4 days. I mean, and because they don't have enough pitching. Like, that's very difficult to comprehend. Like, Robert, it must have reminded you of Exhibition Stadium, that score. And I'll bet you Jim Clancy went 8 innings in that game.
Well, you're 100% right. It is it's puzzling how this manager is using this team. And I do understand this was, you know, these guys are creatures of habit. They like to have a, you know, 6-8 week spring training. They didn't have that kind of stuff. They want it, you know, you want to have them in 20 or 30 exhibition games. They didn't have that. I get that. But I think it's something deeper. I think it's about where this team is at. And yes, injuries have played a factor. Who's their starting rotation? You know, you talk about 16 pitchers and you've got a shortstop throwing. But who's the starting rotation? I don't even know. I don't know from day to day. I'm not sure they know. And when a guy throws 2.5 or 2 2.3 innings, is he really a starter? Or is this just, you know, a reliever throwing a few innings? Explain some of this to me, Elliott, if you can.
Well, they're all right with Ryu, although when they signed him, I thought Ryu was a guy that you would sign if you were one pitcher away, not like four pitchers away.
Yeah, I agree.
But, and then the Walker deal, that was a bad one last night. He didn't get any help from the right fielder. But after that, I don't know. Anderson is and Rourke. So I don't know. That's not. I don't have a starting five for you. I have a starting two.
Bob, what would be you know, Mark and Russ's philosophy of what this 60-game season was? You know, in other sports, a lot of management teams would say, you know what, we're going to just learn from this. But in a 60-game baseball season, and the chance that this team is going to get to, you know, a best 2 out of 3 and get into a bubble and win something, at what cost do you do that, or you just make this 60-game a development league?
I think where they are now, once we're past the deadline, I think, you know, you have to, there's no developing, and where their status is in the standings, I think you have to try and go for it. As unlikely as it may have seemed, you know, that we're talking about that they have a, whatever it is, 89 or 95% chance of making in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
They're there. So, I mean, you got to go. But the thing about that win probability, you remember the Leafs? The Leafs were playing the Bruins. And I turned on the radio, and they were losing 4-1, I think.
They were.
And I got home. I turned it off of hockey. And I got home, and I turned over the highlights around 2:30 in the morning, and they lost. So what would the win probability at when they were up 4-1? And
99 point something percent,
yeah,
probably.
So guess what? It doesn't always work.
So you're not confident that this team, the way it's constructed, can get to the postseason?
Well, I'm thinking they've got a lot of tough games in front of them. They're going to see Tanaka. They're going to see Cole twice. I'm just saying 90, whatever it is, percent. Or it's not a dead lock. Like, let's bet the farm and the house and my buddy's house next door on the fact that they're going. We'll see what happens.
Injuries, you know, are a factor always in sports,
yep.
And they can impact teams, and it's impacted this Blue Jay team to some extent. How to quantify it, I don't really know. And Bichette is back now, but, you know, you were talking about the starting rotation of what they are, and I don't know who they are, and I don't know who those guys are. Pearson did not look as good as we had hoped in the few games that he pitched before he got hurt. Shoemaker was awesome last year and got 3 wins and then was out for the rest of the year and now down again. What do you think if you had Pearson and Shoemaker back? Does that impact this team significantly?
Yeah, that'd be a lot better than
Anderson, who and who?
Yeah. Claude Amalfajuk, yeah.
Yeah.
So they did some work, you know. They brought in Anderson and they brought in Rourke during the off season, but they
haven't been good enough.
No, they haven't. They've been they'd be like we got a number six guy, you know.
Yeah. Well, what do you hear? What do you think? I mean, is there a chance we see Pearson again before, even in the postseason? And would you pitch him?
No, I wouldn't pitch him. I think to John's point, that's the one guy you want to be development. You want to have, you want to concern yourself with developmental this year, because he's had the injuries, had a couple of rough ones or one rough one, whatever it was. There's no sense. What's he got to prove? Like, I don't see rushing that guy back, a young guy like that.
Yeah, see, that's kind of where my question was going, Bob. I mean, if you're the 92 or 93 Jays, and you think you can go for another championship, then you know, go for it. Go to the wall for it every time. But this team is not there yet. It's got so many holes. The young kids, we've put a ton of we as Jays observers and fans have put a ton of pressure on Biggio, Bichette, and Guerrero, and they're not there yet. And this is one where you just have to, I think, learn from what the 60 games and possibly postseason is, and then plan for a really good year next year, because they have a lot of young guys still coming up, don't they?
Yes, they have some guys coming, but I remember when they traded Freddie Galvis, I was talking to a scout, and he says, "Do you want to hear the Blue Jay infield for 2021?" I said, "Yeah, all right." So he says, "Guerrero's at first base, which has happened. Bichette's at second, which hasn't happened, and Biggio's at third, which has happened." And I said, "Well, who's the shortstop?" He says, "Well, they should have kept Gallows."
Well, let's get real specific here, and I'm not trying to throw mud. And look, at this team has their record has been, I think, surprisingly good. And their performance overall has been surprisingly good. And I like the young nucleus of this team. There are some question marks, of course, there always are. But all in all, it's pretty good. Is this team well managed, though, with under Charlie Montoyo? I mean, I'm one of those guys who sits at home like you probably do, and
always picking on the manager, Bob. You're always
every time there's a move.
Then you say that managers don't mean anything in this game.
Well, no, I said managers don't win games, managers only lose them.
Okay.
And the manager who was here before Charlie was a guy that I agreed with his decisions. I liked his philosophy. Most of the time I was on board. Charlie is a delightful human being. I like him very much as a person. I'm glad he's gotten this opportunity. But I don't have a feel at this point as to what his thought process is. Elliot, tell me what you think of the job Montoya's doing.
I thought at the time it was an excellent hire. If you look at the Mets, a year ago hired Mickey Callaway, who was a pitching coach in the American League. The first two times he did a double switch, you have to make it on your first trip, right? So he made it on his second trip, so he couldn't make the change. First two times he tried to go a left-left matchup. He went out before the other team announced the pinch hitter, so he didn't get that. So that's like an American League background. Charlie Montoya, I have not seen anything like that happen. The only thing I would say is that I think a lot of these decisions are not his decisions. And that's going back to Tosca and J.P. Ricciardi. Like I don't believe anybody's phoning down to the dugout, but I believe at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever, hey, if we got the lead in the eighth tonight, we're pitching this guy.
So you think Atkins and Shapiro are pulling the strings on a puppet manager?
I think that was the same way with the Dodgers with Dave Roberts.
I was going to say you're relying on the analytics.
Yes, and I mean what happened was with the Dodgers, they wouldn't let anybody go starter face the lineup third time, so that was fine. So the guy was out after 65 or 85 pitches. And pitched, and they all, guess what? They all got tired, and it's going to be even worse this year without days off in the postseason.
John,
well, let's talk about the postseason. Are you surprised that Major League Baseball has gone to the bubble, Bob?
No, I think they were criticized heavily for not having one. So, I think that's two good spots. I mean, close. I mean, you know, at least, and it'll be interesting to see. I'm surprised. I was looking at it today. There was, I think, there was 54 games lost to COVID, or like they lost the game last night, I think, or was it today in Seattle?
Last night's game, yeah.
So I think they've made them all up except for 17 or 60, something like that. So I was shocked. Like St. Louis went, and Philadelphia and the Marlins, they didn't have anybody to play because either the team they had just played had guys that were tested positive, or so they went like everybody else has got 13 games and they got 5 played.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get 60 games in 66 days. So,
well, the one interesting thing is all those three outbreaks, and those were the most significant ones: St. Louis, Philadelphia, Miami.
Yeah,
all came within the first, I want to say, 10 days of the season. Resuming, yep. Something like that. And it looked like this was going to be a complete and utter disaster. but it hasn't, I mean, that hasn't materialized. And I don't know, it's easy to hand out credit, but I don't think the credit is due to this, but they have managed to keep it in shape.
Or perhaps the teams and the players have finally followed the protocols.
Maybe.
You know, I mean, well, it's as simple as that.
There was a time there where I didn't think they'd finish the season, the regular season.
Oh, I didn't either.
Yeah. And like those two, the two guys from Cleveland, where were they? I think they were in Chicago. They went out for dinner.
Yeah.
Or wherever. And so they brought him in the next day. And like, how'd you like to have that guy as a teammate? Like, this is a time of isolation. Mm-hmm. And they're out mingling, you know.
Well, you know, in truth, you know, if you, all you got to do is look around, you know, we're all here in Toronto. You can go to any restaurant any night of the week now, and the places are packed. Now, granted, you know, they're operating at 50% or 40% or whatever of capacity, but people are back out there. People are wandering around. And, you know, the one place you can go into and not have a mask on is a restaurant. So, look, you expect the athletes, especially baseball players who are not quarantined, and now football players, you expect them to behave. You expect them to stay quarantined, order in if you want to, right, but not, you know, not go in and be, put yourself in a position where you're not wearing a mask. And the fact that it's only been a few of them has really been quite surprising to me.
Mr. Elliott, I want to go back to one specific player on the Jays. Sure. Where is Vladdy Guerrero in all of this? I mean, is he on track? Is he, I mean, I you know, I'm one of those guys. Well, I thought he was supposed to be in better shape than he is. Yes. You know, have they really found, you say first base, have they really found a place for him to play at this point? I mean, that to me, those are I just wonder about what's going to happen with him over the next, not necessarily the next 20 games, but the next 3 years.
Well, he better find first base, because he better adjust to first base, because the only thing left is DH, and they got plenty of those. I mean, I can see people defending him on his footwork and that, like, and it's new, like taking throws and everything. But there was that one game where he dropped two pop-ups. A pop-up is a pop-up. They're catchable balls, both of them. And the one time the guy got a base hit. I don't remember if the guy scored, but that I would say it's a area of great concern, you know, because it was a same concern last year when he showed up heavy, and then I'm told he showed up in good shape to start spring training. But when they had the summer camp, he had bulked up. So,
well, the other problem—not
that I would ever knock anybody for that.
Well, the other problem. Thank you. the other problem that has emerged is that Rowdy Tellez had an okay year last year, but clearly not enough for the Blue Jays to cement him as the everyday first baseman. And they made that decision, and they probably were entitled to it. Now he goes into this rotation with Guerrero, and Tellez reemerges. His right. offensive skills reemerge. And I think we could all make the argument that Rowdy probably deserves to play first base every day based upon his performance. Now he's hurt, but you know, when he's healthy. Mm-hmm. But now they got no place for Guerrero to play. And right. they're gonna cover their own ass, because they've already made the decision to get him off third base. They're not going to put him back there. So now you have this dilemma. And
my fear is that we're going to see – my fear in all this – sorry, Bob – is that we're going to see another Panda Sandoval. That's my fear in all of this. I mean, you know, the Giants and the Red Sox tried to play Sandoval at, you know, on the corner, and it was a disaster, and they overpaid. And are we going to is there something in all of this that we're going to see a really bulky Vladdy Jr. just be able to hit the baseball and not be able to do anything else?
Well, the thing is, I agree with you on Sandoval with Boston, but he was all right with the Giants. I remember the one World Series game at the three home runs.
That was early.
When he could hit, he could hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just wasn't a great defensive player. I mean, you know, and that's not the end of the world.
So now with Vlad Jr., I mean, the thing is, he grew up in a baseball family. He grew up at the ballpark. He knows what is expected. It shouldn't be any surprise that when they take him in the back room and they weigh him, they say, hey, you know, you should be lower. Oh, really? I didn't know that. You know, it's not a blockbuster slap in the face or anything to the guy. He should know this.
I guess my argument there is that, yeah, I agree that he should know, but there's a difference between following in footsteps and feeling entitled. And that's what you wonder. Does he feel entitled? I mean, he's Vladdy Jr. He's a legend at home. And the fanfare, I mean, we were all there that first night he played at Rogers Center. I mean, the fanfare, it was like the coming of Willie Mays. And you wonder if sometimes, I mean, the human side of this, does it go to your head and other parts of your body?
Well, I've had people say he's the greatest prospect in the history, like 2 or 3 years ago, greatest prospect in the history of baseball. The Blue Jays, excuse me. And I said, Derek Bell won the same award. How much did Derek Bell play for this team? So, you know, you never know what's going to happen.
Well, but you know, you are conceding that the bar of expectation on Vladdy Jr. was at the top.
Yes. Like we thought it may have adjusted. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it has adjusted. We thought this guy is okay, I'll give you mine. I thought guaranteed 300 plus hitter that has power, and that power will continue to develop. So I said, I think I could see this guy being a 300 hitter with 30 plus home runs, maybe 40 plus home runs in a year. He's not that guy. At least he hasn't shown himself to be that guy. And it raises the question in my mind, if you take away his ability to play a position, third base is out, first base is sketchy. Now he looks like he's headed to be a DH. Is he even good enough to be a DH right now in this organization?
If Tellez was healthy, you'd probably have Tellez at first.
For sure you would. And Vladdy could only DH.
I think then there'd be room for him at DH. Yeah.
Well, okay. But the question is, are his offensive skills good enough? What's he hitting? 250, 260, something like that. He has power. I mean, John alluded to that, you know, we were alluding to that first day at the stadium when everybody was gathered around and he was hitting rockets up into the top deck. Where's that? Like, you know, every once in a while he connects on one, but this was also supposed to be a guy, Elliot, that was a great contact hitter who had a great eye, who didn't chase bad pitches. All those things have suddenly seemed to disappear. I don't know what you got in him.
Well, he hit the one out last night to right field. That was a good sign, but they're nowhere near what they're getting is nowhere near what they expected.
That's a concern for me, boy. I mean, to me, of all the things that this organization has done, and when you see the development of the young guys and the guys that are coming up, whether it's in double A or A ball, they've done some really good things. But this to me is just staring you in the face that this guy isn't what they thought he was. And so much has been put on his shoulders to carry this franchise.
The best guy, the best young guy last year, or first year guy, was Bichette.
Yeah.
Oh, by miles.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we all agree. Yes, he was down for a period of time, but he was hitting like crazy. I think he was hitting 340 or 350 before he got hurt, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Something like that. And the intriguing thing, and you sort of addressed this earlier with your comment about at some point, Bichette is the everyday second baseman. is, and that may be true, but is that true because of Espinel, at least a little bit? I mean, has he been good enough to earn a spot?
That was said before Espinel arrived on the scene, so I'm not sure. No, just some guys didn't like him, didn't like his range coming out of high school as a shortstop, and he did last year. He proved he could play shortstop, I thought.
Yeah, I did too.
It was just a guy's flippant comment that.
Yeah, I get it. I just wonder whether, you know, Espinel's performance, which has been pretty good when he's had the opportunity. You can't play both of them at the same position at the same time. So, you know, I mean, would you be okay with Espinel as your everyday shortstop?
Well, the thing you have to worry about is how much you're going to need Espinel in the bullpen.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's one for you. So the Jays do get to the postseason. They got a best 2 out of 3. I think right now, if they would play, they might play Minnesota. Who's your starting three pitchers right now?
Well, we don't know. I mean, you got one. Well, maybe two. Who's your second, Elliot? Yeah. Who's number two?
That'd be Walker.
Okay. Who's three?
Three, I guess, would be Roark, I guess. Eek. But here's the thing. You can't – it's not like when we were growing up, like where the season ended and the World Series is going to start on Thursday and Bob Gibson's always started the first game.
Yeah.
They might have to use Ryu on the final day of the season to get in.
Get in, yeah.
So, you know, that takes him out of the picture.
Hey, has he been as good as you thought he would be?
I would say better, yeah. Better than I thought.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
You didn't watch many Dodger games then, huh? Because I watched a lot of Dodger games, and he's pretty good. I mean, I kept waiting for him to fall apart because he doesn't throw hard, and, you know, he's got a lot of stuff, and he nibbles. But he was really good. I mean, I just say he's about what we expected.
Yeah.
Well, I from the 2008 Olympics, I guess, he would, I might be biased from that because they had a number of guys on that team would tell me he'd like the rule is in Korea, you can use this, you can go to the rosin bag, mm-hmm. but you have to wipe it on your pant leg. Okay. Oh. Well, he wouldn't do it. So he'd throw the ball to these left-handed hitters, and it'd be a cloud of smoke. So they're not big Ryu fans. The left-handed hitters that played for Canada in 2008.
A guy who's been, I guess they're trying to find a spot for him, and it seems like he goes where others have failed, is Biggio. I don't know if he's a third baseman. Apparently he's not a second baseman. He could be an outfielder, right field, center field. I don't know if he's played left field yet, but are they trying to find a place for him, or is he just a guy who's good enough that you want him on the field, but not good enough to solidify himself?
No, I think, Robert, it's a lot like Joe Maddon and Ben Zobrist there with the Cubs or Tampa Bay. And, you know, it's the super utility guy. It's the new in vogue thing. We'll put him here. You know, this, the algorithm says this, so we're weak here. So we'll put Biggio there because he gives us more than our other option did in right field or at third base or at second base. But he was not supposed to be a big prospect or a big deal when he signed. This is, whoever was in on him as a scout did a heck of a job. Same as Bichette.
Yeah. Middle of his career as a minor leaguer. He was iffy, wasn't he?
He wasn't. Nobody ever thought, hey, this boy is going to be is going to do as well as his father. I know it's really early, knock knock, but
Well, you know, that goes back to the difference between being around the ballpark and entitlement. Both of those guys appear that they, you know, they learned a little bit from the old man.
Yeah, and Bichette too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Before we let you go, Tampa Bay appears to be the best team in the American League. Is there somebody else that you've seen that you think could jump up and bite people? I mean, the Yankees are playing better. They're getting healthier. Are they the number two choice?
Last week, they were the opposite end of the spectrum. When they played in Buffalo, they were brutal.
They won six or seven in a row now.
The one that I like is, I don't know if it's below the radar or where you guys think, but I like the Twins a little bit, you know, like with Nelson Cruz, and they've got some pitching this year, and they have Donaldson, who's back healthy now. But it's going to be a dogfight.
What about the White Sox, Bob?
Yeah, that's a strong team. They got the young kids. They got Encarnacion. Yeah, they're doing very well. I think and good for Rick Renteria. He's the guy that he was managing the Cubs, and Madden became available, and boom, they fired him like that. And so good for him. He got a job across town, and they obviously doing a very good job. Yeah.
Well, it's all very weird. We're not used to any of this, of course, but we're a couple of weeks away from the end of the regular season, as abbreviated as it is, and then we go right into this postseason. Oh, let me ask you this one.
But
are you sure. A fan of the increased, I know it's a COVID thing, but I like more teams in the postseason. I like that idea. I understand it's going to mean a reduction of the regular season, maybe to 154, maybe even less than that.
It better if it does. It better.
I get it. I get it. I like that idea. We're now going to see what 16 teams make the postseason.
This year. Have they said it for next year?
Well, no. I'm asking you.
I don't think they've said it for next year.
No, I know they have. They haven't. Okay. What do you think of that idea?
No, that's too many, I think. Too many.
Why?
Too many.
Well, you got mediocre teams making the postseason.
Like hockey?
Yeah.
Like basketball?
Exactly. I don't know about basketball, but hockey, it's like everybody into the pool, isn't it?
Well, it was this year, Bob. It was
it used to be.
Yeah.
Half the teams.
Now it's it'll be half the teams. So
you know, and we just saw a number three seed in the NBA knock off a two seed when they were down 3-1 in games, and the two seed was arguably a 1A.
Yeah,
I mean things happen in the postseason. We all know that the best team, you know, the concept of the best team wins is a lie. It's a fallacy.
Right.
The team that's playing the best at the end wins.
Yeah.
And we've seen that in all sports. So, well, I'm a fan. I like the idea of more teams being competitive, more teams having a chance. Where would the Blue Jays be right now if the traditional playoff format existed?
They'd be out.
They'd be trying to figure out how to get to that wild card spot.
Yeah. And fans don't matter now, but if your team is got a chance to get to the postseason, all those empty seats in September, I think suddenly are full. And from an economic perspective, I think that's good for the game. But we'll see. We got to get through this one first.
All right. Well, the one question I wanted to ask you, Robert, is that
of course.
So 20-6 last night, they get beat.
Two missed extra points, I think.
Yeah, that was worse. I think there was only one NFL team that got beat that badly.
Well,
do you have any idea who it was?
Oh, that'd be the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, yeah,
well, up yours, Elliot.
I tell you what, Bob, Elliot, that was fantastic. You waited a half hour for the good jab to the jaw. That was fantastic.
Yeah, but I also got to tell you, the one night I was at Robert's house, and I hear this music, and the Ohio State marching band comes around the corner, and they let Robert dot the I. That was very impressive. Very impressive.
Well,
my Buckeyes logo. I got a Buckeyes.
They were on eight buses.
Anyway, listen, by the end of the week, the Buckeyes might be back playing football.
Oh, look, right there in the top corner. Can you see the top corner there?
Yeah.
Oh, there it is over there. Yeah. Okay.
Let me turn this just.
Yeah, no, you don't. No, you're not a cameraman.
There you go.
All right.
And they're not going to play now till the middle of October or November or next spring or something. Who the hell knows? Elliot, we love you. It's good to see you.
Good to see you guys.
And yeah. we're gonna have you back. All right.
Sure.
You'll be Bob Elliott. Everything NBA, Bob. Everything NBA. That's what you'll be doing.
I'm not much of a basketball guy.
If we did that, I'd be surrounded by two guys who don't know a damn thing about the NBA.
No,
I gotta
three,
go.
Three. Got three.
Two. Three, one. Three. That's it for the podcast for today. We'll see you Friday. Bye-bye.
All right, Robert.